are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna do?
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we review the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. It's Friday the 13th. Well, we'll deal with that a little later after the announcements and so forth. We'll deal with that. But it's the weekend, so I'm hoping that you're going to have a great time this weekend. So I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, need, do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But, of course, if it is not, you are going to get it done because that's the kind of brother and sister that you is. And that's why we love, admire, and respect you for it. You always persevere. This program, African Perspectives, we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. When you look at on the face of it, podcast, click on that, and then it'll bring up African Perspectives, click on that, and then there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, once again, this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All times are going to give are Eastern times. Right after this program on Monday and Wednesday, the Black People Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones from 1 to 3. On Mondays, Monday evenings from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming with Brother Wahad. Right after Acres of Diamonds is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. And then Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. On Tuesdays, Dr. William Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. And then on Wednesday, also from 8 to 10 on Wednesday, is Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness. Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. on Thursdays. If it's Friday, and today is Friday, oh yeah, at 8 p.m. tonight, that's going to be Time for an Awakening. That's right, it'll be Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Fridays at 8 p.m. On Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it's not me, it is Sister POC and her program Revive. 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sunday. And then Sunday evening at 7 p.m., once again, it is Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number, every Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern time to 10 p.m. Eastern time to 12 a.m. It is the Warren Ballantyne Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We buy black. We buy black. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. It is the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. And if you don't want to deal with it online, you can go to, if you're in the Atlanta area near the Greenbrier Mall, and check it out. They have a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall where you can pick up the products that you see online, the laundry detergent, the batteries, the toothbrushes, all kinds of stuff, the deodorants, the salves, the liniments for your body.
all kind of stuff there. You can get from WeBuyBlack.com. Also, too, I mentioned before, and I'll mention again that the We Buy Black brothers and sisters are trying to put money together to create a supermarket here in the Atlanta area. That's right, brothers and sisters. Of all these people in this metro Atlanta area, you know, because this, you know, only, you know, Atlanta, the city itself is small. The population of the city is small. But Atlanta is in five different counties. So even though it's 400,000 in the city, it's over 4 million in the metropolitan area. The Fulton County, DeKalb County, Clayton County, Gwinnett, and Cobb. And so, and it's, you know, a bunch of folks. So they're trying to raise some money. They've raised over 400,000, but to make the dream a reality, they need, as they stated, 1.2. And I think 14,000 people have given something to We Buy Black to make it happen. But boy, I tell you, I would love to, for us to really do something serious, give some serious money to making that a reality, not just for We Buy Black, but for us as a people, and not just here in Atlanta, but everywhere. Everywhere there's a group of us in numbers. That's right. Africa for the Africans, AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Brother Bomani Tayemba has taken a group of our people to South Africa last month, to Johannesburg and Cape Town, and he's going to be taking some brothers and sisters to Ghana at the end of this month, December 24th to January 4th, for only $3,700, brothers and sisters. If you want to look at some of the photos from previous tours, go to Facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to look at some of the videos of previous tours, go to YouTube.com/Bomani2007. Give Brother Bomani Tayemba a call at 404-931-9429, 404-931-9429. And before I leave this, I'm going to go ahead and mention my good brother, Renoka Rashidi, Dr. Renoka Rashidi, who's back in town. He's in L.A., from what I understand. And I'm supposed to be going to Louisiana, too, I think this weekend. I'm not sure. But he has a trip next month, January 21st to February 4th, 2020. He's going to three countries, Senegal, Gambia, and Guinea-Bissau in the western part of Africa. In fact, at the Senegal trip, which kicks it off, there's a special edition, which is a visit to the radiocarbon dating laboratory established by the great scholar and historian, Dr. Cheikhanta Diop. And that's very, very important that you get a chance to see that. So check it out. Go to drrenoko.com and look at the information and the cost. The cost is only $3,800. So check that out. Shrine of the Black Madonna. The Shrine of the Black Madonna, located here in Atlanta in the West End. And they have everything. They have all the things that you need. The shrine. The operation hours are open. Hours are opening from Wednesday through Saturday from 12 to 7, on Sunday from 1 to 3. And they have, I'd say they got furniture, they got clothing, artwork, you know. They got Kwanzaa kits. They got Kwanzaa candles, brothers and sisters. Go to the shrine and other places that may have them. Better do it now because they may run out. And, of course, they have books. They have books. And if they don't have the book that you're looking for, believe me, they'll order it. They also have an African Holocaust Museum. And they have a Saturday class. That's right, the African history class, Know Thyself. Brother Baba Olatunji does an outstanding job of instruction. And it is every Saturday, free and open to the public, from 1:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. Free and open to the public. But if you don't, you know, can't make that, but you like that information, you can get it. You can get it through the Multimedia Library. The African History Club presents the Multimedia Library. It is now 7 terabytes of African enlightenment. Over 15,000 video files, over 15,000 images, over 40,000 audio files, over 2,000 books. It comes complete. And ever expanding. It comes complete and ever expanding. The African History Club. The Medu Netcher, the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, located right next to the kiosk of We Buy Black. If you're about We Buy Black, in the Medu Bookstore is right there. And, of course, the Medley Bookstore is operating hours is 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sunday from 12 to 6. And the number to call is 404-346-3263, 404-346-3263. And that's at the Medley Bookstore. And if they don't have the books you're looking for, believe me, they'll get it. They also have an array of postcards, greeting cards, artwork, T-shirts, and all kind of good stuff. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. I will be with the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. They had Kwanzaa going on there on the third day of Kwanzaa. Ujamaa on Saturday. I will be one of the persons that will be emceeing. And so that's going to be, do I have some? Oh, do I have some of that? I guess I don't. I guess I thought I had, let me look and see. Because it is going to be in Lithonia, and then it's going to be at 6984 Main Street in Lithonia. And that's going to be Ujima, the Collective Working Responsibility, on the 28th, Saturday the 28th. Kwanzaa. Us lifting us to economic development cooperative for our people and in the spirit of Ujamaa cooperative economics. So we like to say family-centered economics. The Thursday night broadcast, every Thursday night at 9 p.m. from 9 to 10 on Blog Talk Radio. And the number to call is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. That's us lifting us. ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people. Akabin Institute. That's right, the Akabin Institute. The next event coming up for Baba Baruti and Yabaruti is a Relationships 101 for brothers and sisters. One will be brothers only, another will be sisters only. And it's going to be at Akabin Institute, and it's going to be workshops that will be preparing brothers and sisters for relationships, selecting a complement, sustaining relationships, dating and marriage, and facilitated by Yabaruti for women and Brother Mawalimu Baruti for the brothers. That is Saturday, February 1st, 2020. Akabin Institute, of course, is the education that they have been giving our young people to prepare them for warriorhood, prepare them to run their own world. To me, that's what's important. We should be put into a position to run our own world. Excuse me. So, make check or money order out to Akabin Institute. Send it to P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia 30310. That's Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia 30310. But if you want to use Cash App or PayPal, the dollar sign, YAA, the letter M, and then Baruti, BARUTI, for Cash App and PayPal. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought, Sister Gabby O'Reilly, who's doing outstanding work in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti, and she deserves to be supported. Believe me, go online, check it out, check out what she's doing with the educational component, the healthcare component, the production of food for the people. Outstanding. Sonjay-Haiti, Sonjay-Haiti.org. Sonjay-Haiti.org. Check it out. And if you feel as I feel, you'll support it. She sent me a letter, graduatory letter, with a picture of the young lady who I'm sponsoring and the work that they're doing. She's a fifth grader. Beautiful. Beautiful. Black Talk Radio Network 2019 Media Project Fund. The Black Talk Radio Network, which, of course, I'm very proud to be a part of. Go online, blacktalkradionetwork.com, and you can just scroll down on the right side. You'll see the donation piece, or you'll click on the link, the Black Talk Radio Network Project 2019 Media Fund, to make your donations, because we want to keep this thing going and make us as strong as possible. Some Kwanzaa happenings, pre-Kwanzaa happenings. Tomorrow, had Baba Kelsey on the program. Wednesday, outstanding. Man, just a beautiful man. Really appreciate him. Well, in the Pittsburgh community, this is where this Kwanzaa is going to be held. This is one of the oldest communities of American African people in the city of Atlanta. One of the oldest. And it's hanging on. But so at the Pittman Park Recreation Center, located in Atlanta, 950 Garibaldi Street, from 1 to 3, from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m., there will be drumming, dancing, poetry, a special elder honor, family fellowship, and activities for children. It's going to be a great time. Sponsored by ASCAC Atlanta and Wadewood of Georgia, the Pittman Neighborhood Residence, the pre-Kwanzaa celebration, and I love it. Also, too, Sunday, that's Saturday, that's tomorrow, but on Sunday, the Association for the Study of American African Life and History, the organization that Carter G. Woodson helped establish, they're having a Kwanzaa on Sunday, the 15th, at the East Point First Millennial United Methodist Church, 2651 North Church Street in East Point, Georgia. And there'll be, and to celebrate the anniversary of the 144th birthday of the Honorable Dr. Carter G. Woodson. And so that's free and open to the public. And so once again, check that out. And I'm going to pull this plug for Brother Kwabena for his Kwanzaa. That's going to be on the 28th. Saturday the 28th, it's the same time. Here's it's from 3 to 7. That is, of course, the 28th is Ujima. So, and there's a flyer upcoming, but they're having it at Sights and Sound Black Cultural Expo Museum, located in the North DeKalb Mall. In the North DeKalb Mall. And more information will be coming for that. So we're doing okay? All right. Okay. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. December 12th. You can't integrate the European side into the African side. You become schizophrenic. We've got to integrate the old African side, which is our heritage, and the new African side, which is our reality, to produce a new African consciousness. Dr. Leonard Jeffries. You study and emphasize differences between people when they have expressive and consequential meanings, when they reflect and manifest real, tangible, effective forces between them, whether social, cultural, political, economic, familial, educational, spiritual, military, emotional, or all the above. At the acelic and cultural levels, Africans and Europeans are irreconcilably different in their assumptions about the creator, the universe, truth, and the purpose of life. This creates very distinct ways of how we look at, act on, and interpret each other and reality. Clearly, there is no gray area of worth. Only one way can rule any given mind. For fused, they induce insanity. If we are ever to be sane again, wholly ruled by an African sanity, evolved and gathered from a truth of our sojourn on this earth, we must come back to our own. Otherwise, the most we can expect is to remain in this senselessness. Affirm, I straddle no fence, nor wander around in any gray area. Affirm, I straddle no fence, nor wander around in any gray area. I know my direction. Sovereignty, or nothing else. December 13th, we no longer allow them to undereducate, miseducate, and control the minds of our beautiful youth, turning them into Negro puppets of poison who feast upon a filthy diet of their own self-hatred. Wow. Robin Taylor Nixon. We must learn to distinguish friend from foe. While we know that any aggression against our conscious African is wrong, defending oneself, one's family, one's community, one's nation against confused Africans is not wrong. There is no difference here between non-conscious Africans and Europeans or any others who act against African interests. The history makes our relationship with Europeans abundantly clear. Although knowing more of the details of the magnitude of their genocidal efforts toward us can be useful, there really is nothing more we have to know. Toward them, their black watchdogs, their Negro watchdogs, any other non-Africans who have proven that they consider assaulting and exploiting us as an inalienable part of their constitutional human rights, we cannot possibly be aggressors. Such people have already committed innumerable aggressions against innocent, warm-hearted, loving Africans without cause or justification. Consequently, our duty is to simply stop this onslaught and prevent its reoccurrence. Consequently, our duty is to simply stop this onslaught and prevent its reoccurrence. Affirm, I distinguish between friend and foe. Affirm, I distinguish between friend and foe. The Inye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Today is Friday the 13th. And we've mentioned this before on many Friday the 13th. Over the last few years, we've been broadcasting here on Time for an Awakening Media. And even when I was broadcasting on, because I like people to understand that, because they see, like right now, if you go to Facebook, because I've seen some, and maybe some other outlets, and maybe, and this was already talked about on the news, Friday the 13th. Because what happens is this. What this society does is consistently put into the minds of its people, some directed to a specific group, like when they target us, or some to the general populace, like what I'm talking about now, because it's to the general populace. You know, many people believe that Friday the 13th, you know, is evil. The number itself is evil. Some bad things have happened on Friday the 13th. To some people, supposedly, they think that's what the deal is. And so the people who have a fear of the number 13, of course, that's a phobia, fear of. There's supposed to be, the word is, treskaidekaphobia. Treskaidekaphobia, the fear of the number 13. You know, no 13th floor on a lot of, you know, that's interesting. I thought about it the other day. I said, you know, you can say you don't put the number 13 on that floor, but if I count the damn floors and it's like a 15-story building or 20-story building and I'm counting the floors, you know, the number 13 will be in that because I'm just counting straight up. I'm getting to 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, so on. But that's how they do it. Same thing in the airlines. In many airlines for a long time, there was no 13th row. I know Southwest, who I fly with mostly nowadays, they do have a 13th row. But there were some airlines that did not have a 13th row out of that fear. I know when back in the day, when back when I lived in Milwaukee, particularly back in the 80s, early 90s, we used to have Black Friday. This would be, on this today, would be Black Friday. And what we would do is go to somebody's house, potluck, bring food, entertainment, spoken word, poetry, singing, whatever, presentations. Sometimes we, because of the fear of I don't know about a black cat. I don't remember seeing no damn black cat, but we did walk under a ladder. Somebody broke a mirror. You know, all of the things the Caucasians said are bad luck. We just did the opposite. You know, Black Friday. In fact, when we had our building, Black Firefighters, we had a Black Friday party. You know, it went off well. So this number 13, this fear of the number 13. And, but that's interesting because if the European wanted to espouse this idea of the fear of the number 13. And yet recognize the number 13 has something different. If they had such fear of the number 13, why did they establish 13 colonies? Why is the number 13 very integral in human life? Huh? That's interesting, isn't it? Because if you look at astrology, although I don't deal with it, but some people do. But if you look at astrology and they say, you know, if you look at how many signs are in the zodiac, 12 plus the sun, 13. How many jurors on a trial, 12 plus the judge, 13. How many knights at the mythical round table of King Arthur? 12 plus King Arthur, 13. You see, the number 13 is the number of transformation. 12 completes the cycle, 13 begins anew. The number 13 is an important number in ancient Kemetic history. And the number 13 became very serious for Europeans when they co-opted that information through masonry and so forth. They knew that the power of the number 13. So why, when they took this country, why did they establish 13 colonies? Why not 10? Why not 15? Why not 12 or 14? But they established 13. Why? Because the number 13 is the number of transformation. 12 completes the cycle, 13 begins anew. If you look at the dollar bill, it's 13 on symbols and so forth on the dollar bill, 13 times, 13 stripes in with the eagle, 13 stripes, 13 arrows, 13 olive branch leaves, 13 letters of E pluribus unum, 13 steps on the pyramid with the all-seeing eye. I mean, 13. Because the European, even though today he's trying to make you think that the number 13 is some spooky, evil, damn number, when the number 13, if put into our daily lives, could transform us. The number 13 is the number of transformation. 12 completes the cycle. 13 begins anew. So, then how can we, you know, when you talk about the number 13, when I do these presentations, I always talk about how many donuts do you get with a baker's dozen? A baker's dozen. 13. Yeah, the number 13, no, not an evil number. It is a great number because it is the number of transformation. 12 completes the cycle, 13 begins anew. So then how can we put this number 13 into our daily lives and transform us as a people globally? Not just a few individuals, no, for us, period. The number 13. First, there is the Nguzo Saba, the seven principles of Kwanzaa. The first principle is umoja, unity. The underlining theme of Kwanzaa is unity. First and above all is unity. Unity not in conformity, but unity in purpose, unity in practice, unity. The next principle is Kujichagulia, self-determination, to do for ourselves, name ourselves, speak for ourselves, and to never again be spoken for by others. Self-determination. The next principle is Ujima, collective work and responsibility. Working together with brothers and sisters who are committed to helping transform our community, working together, collective work and responsibility. I know when I moved here about 5 years ago now, and had some cleaning up to do, I had some brothers come by, and that's a clear example of collective work and responsibility. And I appreciate all those brothers and sisters who helped me make my transition from there to here. The fourth principle is Ujamaa, cooperative economics. Ujamaa, spending our money with each other consciously. Whether if you got to go a few more blocks, a few more miles to spend money to support one another, it must be done. It must be done. I wish there was a service station in my immediate location for sure. But even if it was, maybe less than a mile or two, I'd make that. Because in Milwaukee, Sister Diane, located in Milwaukee on Atkinson Avenue and 8th Street, is the last American African-owned service station. And I remember about 27-some years, I can remember many. Many. Now, she is the last. And I encourage people all the time to support her. And so, cooperative economics is what's important, to spend our money with each other. And hopefully the people who you spend money with, they give back. They give back. They just don't spend money with me, and then I can go live out here and have this kind of car and do this here. No, they give back. They try to expand their business so they can employ more of us. Ujamaa. Next is Nia. Is it Nia Purpose or is it Kumba Creativity? Next. Whatever. This is the fifth principle. Nia, purpose. Nia. What is our purpose? Everything should have a purpose. And that purpose should all funnel in towards the betterment for African people. My purpose is to try my best to educate our people, to raise the consciousness of my people. I try my best to do this every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. with this radio program. This program is about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. I'm not talking about voting. I'm not talking about integration. I'm not talking about assimilation. I'm not talking about going along to get along. No, I'm talking about being totally independent, totally liberated, sovereign. That's my purpose. What's yours? I know the main purpose is for you to live and to live righteously, for you to help your family, your loved ones, to be with them in time of need and in times of pleasure and joy. Purpose. Next is Kumba, creativity. Not just the creativity that we have as a people, the artistic abilities that we have, that where we can dance and sing and act and the athletics. Not just that, but the creative mind that created the ancient civilizations of the past, of Kemet, Timari, Punt, Nubia, and then the contemporary civilizations of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, and what is happening today in some African countries that are coming into their own. Creativity. It is us. It is in us. And one may point out that Miss America, Miss USA team, Miss USA, and of course, Miss Universe, the sister from South Africa, all these African women holding these titles at the same time, showing the creativity and the will of African people, particularly African women, and the beauty, not just the beauty, but the intelligence, the talents, creativity. And then the last principle, Imani, faith. I know that many of us embrace a faith that consumes us to the point that we don't see us as a people. We're more apt to believe in that faith has a salvation. The Christian faith is probably most problematic, and I've spoken on this before, so this is nothing new. The Christian faith, which of course, leads us into a situation where it speaks to us individually. That's why Christian faith is very problematic. And also, too, one of the main problems of Christian faith is it reports itself to be historical. Europeans had to have this faith to be historical. This is not a myth. This is not allegory. Or this is not fairy tale. This is historical. This happened. But yet there ain't a damn thing that they can prove that it happened. Nothing. Maybe a little something here or there that they try to say that and hang that on and promote that. And say, no. There's nothing to prove that this ever happened. There's nothing to prove that December 25th is the birth date of Jesus the Christ. Nothing. These things were created. Somebody, in my conversation, in fact, it was this past Wednesday, but when people talk about, I was talking about holidays being created. Every damn thing has been created by human beings. Everything. So when they talk about Kwanzaa, well, that was made up by some. Yes. But the reason why they made it, to put attention to the harvest festival of us collective. Remember I said the underlining theme of Kwanzaa is unity. So you have faith, but not just the faith in a creation or a deity or a spirit higher than yourself, but a faith in yourself to do great things, to persevere over all detours, pitfalls, and roadblocks that may be put into your path, to have that kind of faith. Faith. So now you have the seven principles of the Nguzu Saba, the seven principles of Kwanzaa, Umoja, unity, Kujichagulia, self-determination, Ujima, collective responsibility, Ujamaa, cooperative economics, Nia, purpose, Kumba, creativity, and Imani, faith. Now you have those seven, hold those. Add to the seven the five C's. The first C is consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, who you are. So that consciousness is very important, who you are historically. And so now that you have consciousness, in a deeper understanding of who you are and what you're about and what you must do, then you develop the next C. Courage. You have courage. You feel good about yourself. Not ego tripping, not arrogance. You have courage. You know that you can pass the test. You know that you, because the third C comes into play. Confidence. Consciousness. I could put either word, as a second or third. Consciousness, confidence, and courage. Confidence. Confidence knowing that you can pass the test. Confidence knowing that whatever happens, that you will overcome. Confidence. You feel good about who you are. You have confidence. Once again, you ain't tripping. You ain't got no ego trip. You thinking you better than it. No, you have a confidence that shines through, that whatever the situation is, you will be able to do what is best for you, your family, your community, your people. So now you have consciousness, confidence, and courage. Add the next C, conscience. Conscience. Conscience means that you do what is right. You stand on principle. You stand on integrity. You do the right thing when nobody's looking. Conscience. You're a man of your word. You're a woman of your word. You're consistently good about helping others. What Baba said about me the other day on the program, he said, that's what I am. He said, you're very consistent in the years that we have known each other since I've been here in 5 years. Been saying the same thing, and I will continue to do so. Conscience. Knowing what is morally right and wrong and doing what is right consistently. And then the last C, conviction. Conviction. No matter whatever detainments there might have been, no matter, you have a desire to be a firefighter, a police officer, a professor, a doctor, whatever it is, even though there's some delays, but because you have a serious conviction, you overcome them to persevere, to realize the dream that you set for yourself. Conviction. So, you have the seven principles of unity, self-determination, collective work responsibility, cooperative economics, purpose, creativity, and faith. You added to those seven principles the five C's of consciousness, courage, confidence, conviction, and conscience. 7 + 5 = 12, plus you, 13. That's how we can put the number 13 in our everyday lives to transform us individually, but more importantly, collectively. Collectively. To transform our community, to transform the African world, collectively. Imagine if our people thought in that way, behaved in that way, embraced this to the nth degree, that said that no matter what, how bad it is in this environment that we're in, and all the things that you're bombarded with on a daily basis, but my heart, my soul, my mind will be on unity, self-determination, collective working responsibility, cooperative economics, purpose, creativity, faith, consciousness, confidence, courage, conscience, and conviction. I put those in my life. I try desperately to adhere to them on a daily basis and share them with others, so their lives can be transformed as well. The number 13, brothers and sisters, is not a bad number. It's not an evil number. The number 13, and for those who suffer from triskaidekaphobia, the fear of the number 13, I should say this, but get over it. Because it's the number of transformation. 12 completes the cycle. 13 begins anew, and that's what we must do. We must transform ourselves to be the kind of people we so desperately need. So, I'm going to tell you what. I'm going to take a break. I know it's a little early, but I'm going to take a break. And when we come back from that break, we'll be talking with Brother Akil Parker and the necessary elements for educating our people. So, we'll be right back. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on TimeForAnAwakening.com and BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com. You're listening right here. You stay right here with us. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up
at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., this program, African Perspectives. Following this program on Monday and Wednesday is the Black People Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones from 1 to 3. On Monday evening, Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, Brother Wahad. And then from 8 to 9, Let's Buy Black 365. After that is Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, also from 8 to 10, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness. And then on Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that's right, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 8 p.m. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Revive with Sister POC, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then Sunday evening at 7 p.m., once again, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Also, every Monday through Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m., the Warren Valentine Show, right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Also, too, on Fridays on Blog Talk from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., it's Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness. And the number to call is 563-999-3089. 563-999-3089 for my good brother, Brother Yusuf Muhammad. Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness. Also, too, I mentioned pre-Kwanzaa celebrations that are happening tomorrow at the Pittman Park over in the Pittsburgh community here in Atlanta from 1 to 3. And then on Sunday, the Association for the Study of Negro Life and African, American African Life and History, the organization that was founded by Carter G. Woodson, they'll have a celebration on Sunday from 3 to 5. And then on the 22nd, next week Sunday, and it's going to be all free at the Art Exchange. A lot of Kwanzaa is happening at the Art Exchange this year with Brother Kenneth Zaki. That is from 12 to 8. It's going to be a big expo, a lot of stuff to buy and so forth, Cameroon Feast, naming ceremonies, all kinds of African dance. It's going to be a really great family program, and that's next Sunday, the 22nd, at the Art Exchange, which is located 2148 Noonan Street in East Point, Georgia. And, of course, I'm going to announce Kwanzaas that are happening around the city and, of course, Kwanzaas that are happening in other cities as well, like Milwaukee and so forth. Brothers and sisters, our guest is with us, and that is Brother Kill Parker. Brother Kill Parker, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I appreciate the invite onto the show.
Okay, you're more than welcome, dear brother. You know, I read from the Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought, a book put together by Mwalimu Baruti, Baba Baruti. And each day, there's gems, man. Believe me, there's gems. And in fact, on the 11th, this past Wednesday, here's a gem I think that you will enjoy in part of our conversation to deal with the education of our children, the education of our people. So on December 11th, we know everything we need to know to teach our children. The fact that we are not doing it means we don't want to do it. Ronald Edmonds. As intelligent nation builders, we must be willing to openly admit that the Western educational system is doing exactly what it was designed to do to our children. It is killing their curiosity and will think and the will to think independently while corrupting their truth with perverted, abnormal cultural imperatives. In reality, it is no more than another form of child molestation. If we are to save our children from this maddening diseducation, how we educate our children and what they come to know as truth must revert to what worked for our ancestors. What does this require? It requires educational institutions that work for us here and now, molded from the minds of our ancestors. It requires schools, good schools, especially for our youth, spiritually and politically separate from Europeans and Negro public and private institutions without ties to them and their curriculum. It requires teachers, better yet, healing educators willing to submit to the sacrifice of dedicating their lives to an African future. It requires specialized, ever-expanding African-centered curriculum, textbooks, reading materials designed to satisfy our children's unique needs. Especially important, it requires supporters, investors, donors, committed, whether secretly or not, to subsidize this intergenerational educational initiative, which is an imperative. Affirm, I build, create for, educate in, and support African schools. I build, create materials for, educate in, and support African schools. The Inye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. And I know we're going to talk about this, but what did you think of that?
Well, I think that's a great one. First of all, I thought it was great. I thought it was very apropos. And I think it's part of a conversation that we should be having more as a collective. And I think it's a great segue into one of the topics that I wanted to discuss, which is the definition of a good school.
Yes.
And I think that's very important, because what I found in my experience, whether it was from being a student myself in Eurocentric neo-colonial public schools coming up, or being a teacher in Eurocentric neo-colonial public schools in the past 15 years, and still currently, basically, is that we have these ideas. Some of us have these ideas about what a good school is. And I think that what needs to happen is there needs to be some strong propaganda which dispels this idea of what we generally accept as what a good school is, meaning the institution that has, you know, some type of prestige attached to it. It seems to be, you know, where your child can be just, you know, physically safe, but there's still cultural violence and intellectual violence that they'll experience in the classrooms. Because, I mean, when you go into a math classroom and you're constantly being subtly told that Black people don't do math because every formula that you're exposed to is named after a white man, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's very insidious, right? So it creates a situation where even if you as a young child of African descent and you excel at mathematics and you have high grades, you end up using mathematics as a tool of assimilation.
Right.
And oftentimes you won't use your mathematical prowess and your skill to nation build. Well, you will be nation building, but you won't be nation building
for us.
People.
That's right.
You'll be nation building for Europeans,
exactly.
You know, Africans and Asians and whoever's gonna hire, you know, you kind of pimp yourself out to the highest bidder.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of trying to use your prowess and your ability to nation build for your own people. So I think we have to more effectively challenge this idea of what a good school is, because a lot of people, I mean, we understand that the American public education system is not ideal. It's not the best for our children overall. But I think what happens is it's kind of like what we do with electoral politics. We look for, like, you know, the lesser of evils.
Mm-hmm.
But we say, well, you know, if I can just, I understand that the overall public education system is what it is, but if I can just get my child into one of the so-called good schools, you know, where, you know, a lot of the white people go, you know, even if it's a public school and we don't have to pay tuition, you know, it's a lot of white people there, it's a lot of Asian people there. And, you know, we talk about diversity and multiculturalism. And of course, multiculturalism, a lot of people don't understand or don't want to accept. It's just global white supremacy. You know, it's a kinder, gentler, and at least in its marketing of global white supremacy, because it's not truly multicultural. Right.
Right.
It's not cultural pluralism, which is what we really need. It's still Eurocentrically dominated, but it's like, you know, okay, we'll call the Black people when we want some spoken word or some dancing, or, you know, okay, it's almost Kwanzaa, so we're gonna do the little Kwanzaa celebration, so let's call the Black people in, and then we call the other group, you know, if it's Chinese New Year, we're gonna call the Chinese kids, or, you know, whatever.
Right.
That's still Eurocentric, because they are still determining when and where. It's like Anna Julia Cooper, like, you know, when and where the other groups will enter, you know, but they're not determined. They don't have their own agency to say, okay, we want to do this. And then, you know, we can't even have a conversation about intellectual tradition, epistemology, because epistemology is cultural. You know, the way certain groups deal with knowledge and information and intellect and how we use it to solve problems. There's no one universal way to do that. And in that, even, you know, if we want to have real multiculturalism, then we have to talk about, how African people using knowledge to solve problems, or how Asian people using knowledge to solve problems. And it may be done differently.
Right.
And it is done differently. But that never enters the conversation. It's always very cosmetic, and it's about artistic expression.
Right. Well, that's just like here. They talked about integration, you know, even when, of course, when I was coming up, the push and the move for integration. Understand something. There is never any integration into this society, because to have true integration is that what you have and what you are bringing to the table and what the other person has and what they're bringing to the table, it is merged. That's integration. They take the best of both and make the positive things happen out of that. No, what this was forced assimilation. Because number one, the European thought that you have nothing to bring to the table. You have nothing. You know, in fact, in the European's mind, and of course, unfortunately, it's been fed into our mind that we were running around the jungle with a rag up our ass and a bone through our nose, never having created a civilization of any kind or any note. You know, this is the thing that was said about us even back in the 1800s, 1700s, all the way up to this present day. That mindset is still there.
Right.
You know.
But then, you know, when you get into, like, you know, what a good school is, I mean, granted, you know, a lot of our people, and, you know, I did a presentation for the Philadelphia Black History Collaborative about 3 years ago, and I talked about some of our scholars and some of our more revolutionary people that, you know, were schooled in these institutions. Like, you know, I talked about, I kind of centered it around Kwame Ture, and Kwame Ture, when he was Stokely Carmichael, he grew up in the Bronx and he went to the Bronx High School of Science.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so he even years later talked about how he received technical training. You know, he wouldn't take anything away from the technical training that received that in that institution. And that technical training is important. But the question becomes, if we're not receiving the cultural grounding and the cultural development in those institutions, and some might argue that that's not the job of the institution, it's the job of the parents in the home. But I think if we own and control our own schools, then schools will be able to supplement that type of cultural development that is taking place in the home anyway.
Right.
So it won't be like, okay, I got to go over here with these white people and learn, you know, the technical skills, and then I got to kind of already be kind of given some type of anesthesia or, you know, a vaccine or vaccinated in my home. So that way, you know, like I have to do with my children, like when they go to their Eurocentric schools, I kind of vaccinate them and give them a filter. So that when the teacher starts, you know, talking the bullshit, they already know that it's bullshit, right? Because if we control the schools, then there won't be any need for that. Because the community and the independent African centered school will be working in tandem. We'll be working together. So it'll be truly supplementary, truly supplementary education between the household and the school. Whereas now, what we have to do is the household has to be intact. The household has to be culturally grounded and has to provide that cultural training and that cultural foundation for the children. And it also has to protect them, just like when it's cold, when it's 20 degrees outside, you give your child a coat. You have to protect them intellectually and mentally from, like I said, the bullshit that the teachers are going to say. Mm-hmm. Some of them wittingly and some of them unwittingly.
Right.
But even if it's unwittingly, if they're unwittingly saying it, that's still no excuse for it. We still have to, because at the end of the day, we still have to protect our children from it. So I think that the ultimate goal is for Black people to realize that in terms of the public charter parochial system, there really aren't any good schools. And then once we start to accept that, then that will create a demand for independent African-centered schools. I think the problem in terms of why we're lacking a large amount of schools like Ababa Baruti has, you know, in Atlanta, or Marcus Klein has in Chicago and in some other cities as well. You know, is that there's not enough of a demand among the general Black community. I mean, people look at that, look at what they're doing and say, okay, that's nice, that's cool, but, you know, my children are good, we don't really need that. But we have to create a sense of urgency.
Go ahead.
Oh, so I was going to say, even if we apply like some of these, you know, some of the ideals, you know, I hate to say this, but some of the ideals of Western capitalism in terms of marketing, just in terms of business, you have to create a sense of urgency, you know, and you have to play on the insecurities of people. So if I feel insecure that my child is not getting what they need, then that creates a demand in my mind, right?
Right.
And I think that's something that we have to do. And the thing is, we don't have to be dishonest about it. You know, we can be honest about it. A lot of times with Western capitalism and the marketing in terms and how business is set up, you know, these corporations are lying to us, you know, making us think that. I mean, Malcolm talked about, you know, capitalism, you know, and the corporations, and he said, you know, it's one of the worst aspects of it is that it, you know, convinces a person to hate themselves. Mm-hmm. So like you alluded to, like this false historiography about us, you know, running around in the jungle and being uncivilized, that's sold to us so that one of many reasons is so that they can sell us products and we'll buy stuff that will enable us to, at least in our mind, get away from our African heritage and our African roots.
Right.
So the thing is with marketing the idea and creating a demand for schooling or education of our own, we don't have to lie. You know, we could be honest. I mean, the lie actually has been given to us that that these schools are good enough and that these schools are sufficient, but they're not. And, you know, we have to create more of that propaganda and have more of these conversations, you know, instead of talking about Lizzo and things like that, you know?
Yeah, that's for sure.
More of these conversations.
Yeah.
Instead of the conversations that the mainstream media will give us to keep us from having these conversations. These are the types of conversations that really matter, because it directly impacts our ability to nation build.
Right. And that's what's important.
To really get free.
Right. And that's what's important. We, you know, we have to understand that this is theirs, not ours. And
right.
even though we attain some education and get a good job and move to a subdivision, cul-de-sac, or gated community, it's interesting that here in Atlanta, you have many subdivisions that are all us, with beautiful manicured lawns, beautiful homes, and I'm quite sure the interior is immaculate and so forth. But we don't have one damn supermarket in this city. We don't even have a service station, convenience stores in this city that are ours. We don't have not one, because the understanding and belief amongst us is that we've made it, you know. I'm the first one in this community, or my daughter goes to this school and son goes to that school, and they're on the dean's list and so forth. Anything that the European has, we've been trained to believe that it is good, and it's good for us to have. And of course, what happens is that we are denied that. And so by being denied that, we want it even more, you know? And so as a consequence, we don't believe in building our own and making our own. I ain't talking about comparing nothing to Caucasians. Damn it, we're making our own for our benefit, you know, for us to recapture and reclaim and restore the knowledge of our past and dealing with the present so we can prepare for a future, you know. This is vital work, that you're doing, that Baba Baruti's doing, that many other African-centered educational institutions are doing. Because even though you might have a school that is a charter school or a, what's that other type of school they have? Choice school, and of course the parochial and private schools, these schools still are European in terms of what they deliver and what they're expected of. Because the Department of Public Instruction say that you got to have this, this, and this for that school to function. My contention is our education should be independent. There ain't a damn thing that they could say to us about what happens or how it should happen. You know, that's what we need. We need independent African schools. We need independent African education. And then once that begins to happen and take hold, then no longer will we be talking about commercialism, materialism, you know. We'll be talking about how can we build that community. In fact, one of the main things that this educational process should really do is to help us develop the mindset to get the hell up out of here. Because in this environment, it's going to be very difficult for us to maintain an African-centered worldview when you are in the midst of an open and sworn enemy. Because it's not going to change.
It's been anti-African since day one.
Exactly.
So it's not even that's given information, like, you know, the beginning of the geometry proof that you try to solve. You know, that's given information. You know, mm-hmm. from that given information, I mean, it's axiomatic. You know, you take that information and try to prove something else. So we should already know that, you know, that this is anti-African space. So, but, you know, again, I think that comes back on, like, you know, people like, you know, myself, and, you know, like people like us, you know what I'm
right.
saying? Like,
right.
we have the responsibility to try to, you know, teach more of our people, you know, and make them more aware of what the realities really are. And that's one of the things I constantly think about, which motivates me, is that, you know, if people knew better, they would do better.
Right.
At least some people.
But, you know, by using that adage, people knew better, they do better. But a lot of times people don't want to know. Because by knowing, it automatically challenges you. They'd rather go along to get along. They don't want to know. They don't want to be African. I ain't African. You know, I ain't no African. You know, many of our people think that because we've been here for so damn long that somehow we're a different human species. You know, we're something that this European has created. We're different. We're African. We're Afro-Americans and bull. You know, the fact of the matter is that we are an African people, but we've been made to feel ashamed to being African. And we've been made to feel that we need to love and embrace what the European has, even though he's constantly denying us. But by doing so, we go after it even harder, as opposed to saying, well, forget you. I don't want your stuff anyway. Because there was a
we need to exercise our egos in more meaningful and effective ways. Mm-hmm. You know, because that's, you know, we just need to have more pride, you know, as a people. But that brings me to, so that point you make, that brings me to something else, another idea that I'm working on, that I'm trying to, develop, which is this idea of like role modeling, you know, more targeted and more intentional role modeling, or I call it geographic exemplar replacement.
Okay, yeah, I see that here. Yeah.
Even if we don't get into the geography of it, I mean, the geographic part just means that what I've recognized over time, and this is, you know, a theory of mine, is that I think that, like, especially with our youth, right? And even elders at one point were youth, right? So, but with our youth today, like, no matter where you are, whether you're in Atlanta, Philadelphia, Baltimore, DC, Chicago, LA, there are always going to be people that the power structure, mainstream media, is going to give our youth that they want them to identify with. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that happens is, okay, so then they say, okay, identify with this man or this woman. So then they start to internalize and want to mimic their political ideology, their cultural ideology, their economic ideology, and so on and so forth. But what happens, I think, is it's like, you know, for example, you have in Atlanta, you might be given some, I don't know, these guys are kind of a dime a dozen, but, you know, one of these commercial rappers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, people won't think about, you know, even though he wasn't originally from Atlanta, but he did some serious work in Atlanta in recent years, you won't think about H-Rap Brown or Imam Jamil Alameen,
mm-hmm.
right? Because that person is blocked, right? Or youth in Chicago are given some athlete or some entertainer, so they won't think about Fred Hampton, or Fred Hampton will be blocked because there's a different ideology there. But because I believe that, you know, youth just want, they want to represent, they want to be connected with somebody that's from where they're from. But then the question becomes, if we are able to educate them about people that are from where they're from, and then, okay, the mainstream media is still going to give them the person that they want to be, that they have placed in within the pop culture. But then the youth can make a choice. They say, okay, I'll either, do I want to go with Fred Hampton, or do I want to go with Chief Keef? You know? And then also we got to have the conversation about this, like, what I think that the concept within African society, traditional African society of both and, you know, how we engage binaries, I think that kind of is overplayed by certain people, because a lot of people would hear me say that and say, well, why can't it be both and? Well, mm-hmm, it can right. be both and, but sometimes, I mean, you're not going to sit up and tell me that my ancestors never at any point drew a line and said, we're doing this and we're not doing that.
Right. And, Akil, that's where we are to me at this moment. Time is of the essence.
Yeah.
To me,
the thing is with that whole both and thing, it gets perverted. The both and thing gets perverted. Mm-hmm. And sometimes while both and is necessary, because we need to understand, you know, we can take different parts of different ideas and different people, but it gets perverted. And what it does, it gives us an excuse to embrace neoliberalism. Mm. And then the neoliberalism is like anything goes.
Mm-hmm.
So if anything goes, then we never put our foot down. We never draw a line in the sand. We never hold people accountable. We never say, okay, no, we're not doing this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, oh, we're going to do everything. And it's just, we're trying to do everything. And then we're, you know, we're afraid to be so-called divisive. And say, oh, you're being, well, we need, I think sometimes, and this may be another conversation, I think we need to have more division sometimes, you know, because sometimes you can only grow by division. You know, a lot of organizations have grown because there were competing ideologies within the organization. And some people said, okay, we're in this camp, and some people in this camp, and we need to go over here and do this. And, y'all go over there and do that, you know? And maybe we can coexist, or maybe we can't. Mm-hmm. But if it's all about what's the best for the future and what's the best for all of humanity, then we got to do what we got to do. So that's another thing too. Like, us being able to, like, you know, draw a line in the sand and say, okay, you know, and really give the youth a choice, mm-hmm. you know, so they can say, and they're intelligent, and they can say, okay, do I want to be like him, or do I want to be like him?
Right.
Like, and for the young sisters, like, you know, do I want to be like, you know, Nicki Minaj, or do I want to be like Asada Shakur? But a lot of this, I contend that a lot of the sisters that want to be like Nicki Minaj or Cardi B or the City Girls, they don't even know who Asada Shakur is.
Exactly. They haven't been introduced to the alternative, the positive alternative. They've been consistently force-fed or consistently visualizing people that really are no good for us.
Right. So in a way, it's really not their fault. Because I mean, when I was a youth and I was in high school and I wanted to be like the rappers and, you know, kind of embrace their politics and the type of culture that they embraced, that the Eurocentric culture and blackface that they embraced, a lot of them. I didn't know about Sheik Ansa Joke. I should have, but I didn't know about Sheik Ansa Joke. I didn't know about, you know, Kwame Ture, really. I mean, I heard of Kwame Ture on, I'm thankful for KRS-One and his 1990 Edutainment album that Boogie Down Productions put out, because he had like five or six interludes with Kwame Ture speaking on it. Mm. And that kind of was my introduction to Kwame Ture, mm-hmm. When I was like, you know, very young in the middle school. But then it was years later, like 20 or so years later, that I actually started studying the brother. And then, you know, started reading his work, and, you know, I read Ready for Revolution and read Stokely Speaks. And, you know, mm-hmm. as a teacher, I read Black Power, and that really changed my life, really opened up my eyes, kind of developed, you know, refined me and developed my politics.
Right on.
You know, but again, a lot of the young brothers and the young sisters that are embracing a lot of the role models that are forced upon them, they're not given any alternatives. So I think that's work, and that's, like I said, something I'm trying to develop.
Well, you know, back when I was in school, the only people that they put into the public school, I was in Milwaukee, and it was George Washington Carver and Booker T. Washington. They didn't even put in Frederick Douglass. They put in nobody that would be controversial, nobody that would be challenging them, nobody that would be fighting back. They just put people in who wanted to cast their bucket down where they were. And I'm not disparaging Booker T. Washington, because I think that, in essence, the plan of Booker T. Washington, the plan of Marcus Garvey, the plan of mm-hmm. of all of them was a positive plan for us as a people, you know. But
and right there, if I could just interject.
Sure.
So right there, what you're saying, I think that's a valid implementation of both and. Because we can say, okay, we can take some parts of, some aspects of what Booker T. Washington was trying to do, definitely. We definitely do not need to throw away Booker T. Washington completely. We definitely can implement and, you know, try to promote some of his ideas. But we can also promote some ideas from some people that, you know, thought differently, like, you know, some of Du Bois' political ideas, right? Mm-hmm. So that's where both and really, really plays. But like I said before, like, sometimes both and gets perverted, I think. Mm-hmm. And it leads us to never saying, okay, nah, we don't need any of that, you know. From this, because this person is not promoting anything that really is going to benefit us, right, as a collective and as a community. Like, they're just not. So we need to give the youth choices and say, all right, well, you know, it's kind of like, you know, rap group Black Sheep had a song back in the day called This or That. You know, the choice is yours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, but you gotta provide information so the youth can then decide, like, what choice do you want? Like, who you want to go with? You know,
right.
Fred Hampton had a speech where he was talking to the crowd, and this kind of, I think, influenced me thinking like this as well. And he, you know, it's back in like 68 before he was assassinated, and he's talking about, like, you can be with you know, you can go with Lyndon B. Johnson or Ho Chi Minh, you know, you can go with you know, Bobby Rush, the Minister of Information for Chicago Black Panther Party, or you can go with he's the expletive I'm not going to repeat right now, but yeah. You can go with Jesse Jackson. You know what I mean? Because he wasn't a fan of Jesse Jackson, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, you're giving people choices. Like, okay, who do you want to go? But now everything is so streamlined. It's like they don't, like, you got, you know, young brothers and sisters in Philadelphia have never heard of Mumia Abu-Jamal. because they haven't been taught. They strategically have been diseducated.
And see, and that's what I'm saying. Right. And see, Brother Kill, that's what I'm saying. You're not given that information within a lot of the educational institutions, whether it's public, private, choice, charter, whatever. Only in the independent African-centered educational institutions and sites that you're going to get those variances. You're going to get other different opinions and concepts because why? They want you to see the difference. See, like for me right now, I'm at a position like I want to draw the damn line. Either you're going to be with us or you're not. We're in a very tenuous position. You know, we really don't have a lot of time. Considering how the European is and his ability to destroy life with the armaments he has. Not a lot of people talking about that's not going to happen because we can do this, that, and other. Maybe because of our collective spirituality or something. I'm saying in a real physical sense, they have the ability to annihilate us. Just like Francis Crest said, they come to the understanding that we had the genetic ability to annihilate them. And so in their mindset, we got to control this. You know, I just heard another piece about, genocidal attacks on African people, you know, globally, you know, in terms of our ability to reproduce. And of course, the depopulation of African people that has been promoted by various people. In fact, I was at a program. They talked about scholarships, and this one brother hailed the fact that he got a scholarship through the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. You know,
right?
And so I raised my hand and said, "Do you know? I know you know who Bill Gates is, but do you know what the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has been promoting? You know, and in fact, they've been promoting, you know, a depopulation, particularly of African people." Hell, he even said it himself. Now, you know, when you talk about a vaccine, if I'm talking about a vaccine, now, historically, or at least in my opinion, when they talk about vaccines, and I know in the history, polio vaccine, measles vaccine, they're to eradicate or help human beings, to help human beings, you know, overcome that affliction or disease to live longer. But here, he's saying it himself. He's saying we developed this vaccine that will have population control abilities. Well, damn, that ain't no vaccine. That's, you know. And then I mentioned the fact that, you know, not only that scholarship, but Rhodes Scholarship. I just seen on email the sister got a Rhodes Scholarship. Well, do you know who Rhodes is? It's Cecil Rhodes, who killed millions of African people and took their wealth. Created a country for himself that is now Zimbabwe, but was then Rhodesia, and helped set up the diamonds, the diamond mines that in South Africa. This is stolen wealth and killed people. And yet he has, and I bet you any money, man, there was never any design for Africans, whether in America or anywhere else, to get a part of that money for scholarship to go to England at Oxford or Cambridge and study. But to me, it's like this, getting a scholarship. Because I remember a brother who played for Florida State. He played D-back. He had his interview and so forth. So he had to come to the game at halftime. They showed him getting off the helicopter and running into the stadium, all still while praising the fact that he was going to be a Rhodes Scholar. In fact, now he is a neurosurgeon. That's beautiful for him. Okay, I ain't got no problem with that, you know. But to promote the scholarship, understanding who Cecil Rhodes is, getting a scholarship in the name of Cecil Rhodes is tantamount or the same as a Jew, a European Jew, getting a scholarship in the name of Adolf Hitler. You know that wouldn't happen. But because we don't know, and don't know the history, and of course a lot of us don't want to know, that they hail this as some accomplishment, you know. And that's our problem.
But then we got to have some uncomfortable conversations, because, and I kind of see it from both sides. But I say at a minimum, because I know, like, the brother You know, the video is on YouTube. It's been floating around for some years. But the brother named Andreas that, you know, went to Morehouse. He was valedictorian.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I believe. Yeah.
I think he turned his down.
He turned it down.
And he took the opportunity at the graduation.
Yes, sir.
You know, the land based roles and just European imperialism and you know, Western, you know, imperialism just in general. But then the question becomes, I think at a minimum, because I wouldn't say always turn down the money, but I think at a minimum, we have to have some humility. You know, like there has to be some, like, you know, not, we can't have all the, you know, I have this huge sense of pride, like, oh, I got this road, like, you know, black man, I got with a Rhodes scholarship. Nah, I'm gonna be humble about it. I'm gonna feel bad about it because I know, because once you know. Then once you know better, you'll do better. You know, if you don't turn it down completely, then at least if you do accept it, because you're like, okay, my end game is to get this education and to use it to serve my people.
Hopefully. Right on.
Because if you only use an education to serve some other people anyway, then you might as well just take the scholarship from Cecil Rhodes and be proud of it. Because you're basically just carrying on his tradition anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to serve your people, at a minimum, you got to just, you're going to feel bad about it naturally. But again, it'll be like, you know, I know what my end game is. I know what my goal is, and it's a means to an end.
Right.
You know, but but we definitely shouldn't be running around, you know, all proud and, you know, swell with pride, or, you know, but again, you have to have an awareness of what Bill and Melinda Gates are doing. You have to have an awareness of what Cecil Rhodes, you know, represented. You have to have an awareness of, I mean, even if we attend certain schools and we know, you know, if you go to University of Virginia, you say, okay, well, UVA was founded by Thomas Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, I'm going down there to get this education, but I'm disgusted as a black man or a black woman. I'm actually disgusted by just being here on this campus. But, you know, I know that I'm here for a specific purpose. But I think back to, you know, African-centered education and us just thinking in ways that are more reflective of our own experience and for our own benefit, we have to start thinking about those things and measuring our, measuring our own personal performance in those different ways. And then hopefully if enough of us start doing that, then, you know, young brothers and young sisters won't have to, you know, even consider getting a Rhodes scholarship, because we'll, you know, more black people will be able to pool resources and be able to create our own scholarships.
Yeah.
So it's like, no, brother, you don't have to worry about that contradiction because we're going to finance you.
Right. And that's what we should do.
You know?
But right. I mean,
that should be the goal for us as a collective.
Mm-hmm. But see, the problem is that, you know, in the early part of the program, I talked about the number 13 because today is Friday the 13th and all the superstition that is surrounding that.
You taught me a new word,
Triskaidekaphobia. I never heard of that
yeah,
before.
Yeah, that's the fear of the number 13. The fear of the number 13, right. You know. And of course, the people who took this country, they didn't have that fear. In fact, how many colonies did they establish? Exactly, 13. Because they knew that the number 13, because they had co-opted the knowledge of ancient Kemet, they co-opted that knowledge, Shriners and Masons and so forth. And they knew the number 13 is the number of transformation. 12 completes the cycle and 13 begins anew. And so what they wanted to do here is what we had done there thousands of years ago. That's why the city of Memphis is on the Mississippi River. In fact, they used to play their basketball games in a pyramid in Memphis. And it had a statue, I guess it was supposed to be Ramesses. I don't know who the hell it was supposed to be. Just like Las Vegas, you know, they had the Luxor Hotel, you know, because why? The Europeans have co-opted ancient Kemet, you know, and claimed that for themselves, even though Dr. Sheikh Anjajab had proven. He said, I can prove to you that the ancient Kemetic people or Egyptian people were African or black. And he did. He won the damn debate. He won the debate. Him and Dr. Thelafili Obenga won the debate, you know, back then. But yet today,
like in 74,
huh?
Like in 74, right?
Yep, 1974 in Cairo, 1974, and yet today, still, the National Geographic, the Learning Channel, Discovery Channel, PBS, or whatever, still, if they show ancient Kemet in a dramatization or illustration, the people going to look white or Caucasian. But if they show somebody serving somebody, what they going to look like? Exactly. Because what they constantly want to do is put into our minds that we ain't never been nothing but a servant. And nothing could be furthest from the truth. So if you continue to follow their narrative, this is what you believe. That's why, you know, you won't be down with African-centered education because you'll think that it is inferior. You won't be down with things that we are promoting and doing because you want to be as close to the Caucasian as possible because you have been trained that way. You've been trained to neglect and undermine yourself at your own peril, but for their benefit. See? So, you know, 12 completes the cycle, 13 begins anew. So I said, how can we put this number 13 into our daily lives to transform ourselves to be the kind of people that we must be? And of course, I use the Nguza Saba, the seven principles: unity, self-determination, collective responsibility, cooperative economics, purpose, creativity, and faith. Now, take the seven, hold the seven, and add to it the five C's: consciousness, confidence, courage, conscience, and conviction. And so 7 plus 5 is 12, plus you is 13. Imagine, my brother, if we did follow the Nguza, because we have all we need. I know you know that, Brother Kid. We have all we need. We have the Nguza Saba. We have Ma'at. We have all the things that many times that we have put forth codes of conduct for us as a people. We have what we need. The only thing that we don't have is our minds. That prevents us from pushing forth the kind of initiatives that are going to liberate us and put us into a position of self-determination and sovereignty. Because to me, sovereignty should be the ultimate goal for African people. Because there's no way in hell that we can really stay here or anywhere else where Caucasians, because wherever Caucasians are, they're going to want to be in control. Just like Bobby Wright said, it defies all laws of probability. Wherever they are, we are. They're in control, and we're in a subservient position. It's on the continent, and it's throughout the diaspora. So we got to change that dynamic, and that's what you're doing. I know.
Right. Well, yeah, that's the work I'm trying to do. And you mentioned Shake Out to Joe, so I want to talk about an experience I had, and you know, get into another topic. So you mentioned Shake Out to Joe in terms of and his work with Obanga and, you know, 1974 and them basically, you know, and a lot of other African scholars prior to Joe and even subsequent doing the work of taking Egypt back from Europe.
Right.
Reclaiming Egypt. Right. I was having a conversation one day in the spring with a brother down in Atlanta with Keisha Majimoyo, the Aya Institute. And one of the things, you know, I was talking to him, he was talking to me about the work I do with, you know, math and with teaching math and my math teaching experience over the years and the work I'm doing with my company, offering math tutoring, private math tutoring to, you know, students. And, you know, one of the things he said that really, it hit me like a ton of bricks because it was so basic but so profound. He said, we got to take math back. And that's so it was so profound to me because he wasn't saying that, you know, it wasn't like, you know, this typical like achievement gap conversation that's so popular in the mainstream and it's so popular in liberal, you know, education circles, like, you know, closing achievement gaps. Because even if you talk about closing achievement gaps, it gives the appearance that you're trying to create equality and trying to empower black children, but you're really still inferiorizing them because you're making white children the standard.
Right.
So you're telling them, okay, yeah, the white children are better than y'all.
Mm-hmm.
The white children are smarter than y'all. White children get better scores than y'all, but we're gonna help you get up to their level.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like that sounds good in theory, but really you're still reinforcing and reinscribing this idea that we are inferior intellectually
mm-hmm.
because I have to get up to their level, you know, as if their level is really that high, and you know the empirical data, you know denies that anyway. But you know, and then I was thinking more about what the brother with Kesa said, and it makes even more sense, because when we talk about nation building, when we talk about you know being self-sufficient, self-reliant, we need infrastructure.
Right.
And mathematics is the key to that, because you can't build anything without mathematics. And I also think that, like I mentioned earlier, like mathematics being used even for black children that excel in mathematics, like I was, when mathematics is seen as a tool of assimilation. So then it makes sense that, okay, well, if mathematics is not mine, and my people don't really do mathematics, but I'm like one of the, it creates and maintains this kind of Negro exceptionalism, where it's like, I'm better than the rest of y'all.
Yeah.
Because I was a calculus in 12th grade, and y'all wasn't. So I'm better than y'all, and I can go over here with the white people, and then I can go to college, you know, and I can go to these programs or whatever, and I can go to college, and I can get a degree, and I can study mechanical engineering, and I might even go to an HBCU. But in my mentality, in my mindset is, I still want to just go work for Nissan, or I still want to go work for Ford.
Right.
My mentality is not that I want to get with some brothers and some sisters in terms of, you know, collective work and responsibility. Get down with some Ujima, some implement some real life in Guzo Saba on a daily basis, and say, yo, we need to create our own car company. That's what we need to do. If we good enough, if Ford is going to hire us to do this work for them, we can do this work for ourselves.
I say.
But that's not even going to be the mentality. And I think the root of it is that mathematics and that science that we study, when we look at those subjects as the root of those practices, of that engineering, then it's like, well, if the math and the science doesn't belong to me, then the thing that the math and science is used for, why should that belong to me either? Like, why would I even think that black people can manufacture cars and produce cars or manufacture boats or, you know, maintain utility systems or maintain electric companies or natural gas delivery companies or water companies in different municipalities? Why would I even think that? So I think that's why, like, that comment that he made saying that we got to take math back, because that's not having ownership of math. And it doesn't mean that, like, I'm not saying Europeans can't use math. Fine, use math. But, you know, we need to use our own math.
Right, because everybody uses math. Everybody uses math.
Right.
You know? Exactly.
There's a discipline called ethnomathematics, which really gets into how culturally mathematics is applied differently depending upon the culture, the cultural context within where it's being used within. And, you know, like I said, like, you know, African people, you know, with our, you know, our cultural, you know, cultural imperatives, we would use math a certain way and to achieve certain things and to solve certain problems. And that's another issue too. I mean, Amos Wilson talked about this often. He said, like, the issue with us, like those of us that are very intelligent, we're wasting our intelligence because we're using our intelligence to solve other people's problems. If we have enough problems of our own, we need to know how to solve our own problems.
Right.
And that's what we got to start doing, and we got to start telling our children that from early on. So a lot of time, like, I wrote this this article recently for this local newspaper in Philly called The Scoop, and I entitled it Smart for What? Because a lot of us have brilliant children. Others of us have highly intelligent children. But for what?
Send me that, brother.
So what if your child has straight A's if the goal is, you know, for them to just go work for white people?
Right.
And just help solve white people's problems. It's a waste.
That's right. You know, education for what? I was part
exactly.
of
that. So I think a lot of people, it's not that they're trying to be pernicious. A lot of people in our community, they're not trying to be pernicious. That just has never occurred to them. So that's not a conversation or a thought that they've even had. And I think, you know, if we start having those conversations, then again, and I think that'll start to lead to us, you know, being more independent in terms of our education, because we still want to be. Largely, we still want to be educated by other people or schooled by other people. And then we kind of think that some of us still want to be independent, but our independence is limited, like even in terms of businesses. We have a lot of independent black businesses, but I think we need vertical integration. We need wholesale. We need, like, every single thing. Like, we need black paperclip companies. And then even when we get into the businesses, we got to talk about we got to do class analysis.
Yeah.
'Cause we don't want to just, you know, do this exploitative, oppressive, monopoly capitalism thing and just replace the white people and replace the Asians and the Arabs. We got to start talking about cooperatives. So everybody, we got to create a system where everybody can eat. Where it's not, okay, well, you know, you are in position to eat, and then the people that aren't eating got to rely on philanthropy capitalism and mm-hmm. worry about handouts and charities and, you know, hopefully I get a free turkey at Thanksgiving because I'm poor. No, we can create systems where everybody can have what they need and everybody can also contribute to mm-hmm. the society. So it's not, you know, going to be one of these things where, okay, these people just sitting back not doing nothing and they still going to benefit. No, you still got to contribute, you know, just like in a household.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people have households that operate like in a cooperative fashion anyway. And we can scale that up. But we got to study about that and start having more conversations about that in order for that to become realistic. But that whole thing about, you know, taking math back, and just, you know, taking mathematics more seriously and not using it as a tool of assimilationism and not using it as a tool of Negro exceptionalism, where we feel like, well, you know, I could do math and you can't. So I'm going to go over here with these, mm-hmm. with these white people. And, you know, they're going to accept me. Cause I mean, Carter G. Woodson talked about that in The Miseducation of the Negro. You become useless to your race because, you've been trained in a way where you've been told that, you know, your race is unworthy and mm-hmm. inferior. So you don't even want to really help your race. And then, you know, the Europeans, they're not really going to accept you as one of them, you know, although they'll use you.
Yeah, they'll use you, but no, you'll never be accepted. You know, you're just an appendage. You're just somebody to, you know, to help further their advancement and their idea of what they want to happen. You know, and then once that's over, you're discarded. You're just like any other, quote, you know what, you know.
Can I go back? Because
earlier I was prepping for the interview, and I've been listening to the audiobook of Dark Water by Du Bois, right?
Okay.
And speaking of good schools, there's a passage from his essay, The Immortal Child, which is an excellent essay that I recommend to everybody. I recommend the whole Dark Water to everybody. I definitely recommend within that book, if you don't have time right now to read the entire book, go to The Immortal Child. He's got a couple other essays like The Damnation of Woman. I definitely recommend that. Of Work and Wealth, I recommend that one. Also, The Souls of White Folk. He wrote an essay called The Souls of White Folk. It was like a spinoff of his Souls of Black Folk, which came out 15 years earlier. Yeah, but anyway, but let me, it's a quick passage which kind of relates to this concept of what a good school is, right? So he says, back of our present educational system is the philosophy that sneers at the foolish fathers, he's talking about the founding fathers, who believed it self-evident that all men were created free and equal. Surely the overwhelming evidence is today that men are slaves and unequal. But is it not education that is the creator of this freedom and equality? In his way, he goes in. He says, most men today cannot conceive of a freedom that does not involve somebody's slavery. They do not want equality because the thrill of their happiness comes from having things that others have not. So I'll stop right there because a lot of times, like I said, again, mathematics, specifically as a subject, being a tool of assimilationism, it's like, oh, I'm good at mathematics, and it means I'm better than you. So you stay over there in the poor school, in the school that doesn't get the resources, and I'm gonna be over here in the magnet school, in the special admit school.
Mm-hmm.
And there's definitely this, you know, there's a discrepancy in terms of what you receive, what your experience is gonna be, and what my experience is gonna be. But I take pride in the fact that I go to the quote-unquote good school, because the good school is only a good school because it's not the bad school. So the bad school has to exist in order for there to be the good school. Because it's about comparing contrast.
Right, and see, that's the European's way. You know, that's how the European is. See, in order for the European to thrive, and particularly capitalism, understand capitalism, in order for me to have all that I have, a whole bunch of people ain't going to have nothing or little to nothing. So that's that mindset. So go ahead.
The system that requires poverty.
So it's like, I don't understand how. Well, I understand because people don't really study cat. They don't really study the systems that they live within. You know, I mean, it's a system where you can win within capitalism, but your winning means that a whole lot more people have to lose.
Right.
Losing is a requirement.
You can lose. You can win individually.
That's
yeah, you can win individually because it speaks to you as an individual. It's just like Christianity. Christianity is an individualistic religion. I'm blessed and highly favored. Oh yeah. Oh, you blessed and highly favored. Your community is going to hell. Your family ain't doing good, but you blessed and highly favored. See, it speaks to people individually. And see, individualism is a European or Caucasian desire. Say it all the time. That's just like Caucasians when they talked about redistributing wealth. All the Caucasians were against that because they believe by some miracle, a lawsuit, a lottery, or inheritance, whatever, that they too will be a millionaire or a billionaire. So no, they don't want to redistribute wealth, you know, because they're into individualism. So individualism is a European Caucasian desire, but collectivism is an African imperative. It is a must.
Yeah, I mean, it just makes more sense.
Yeah,
I mean, when you think about it in terms of it just makes more sense.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it doesn't make more sense. Maybe it's a function of the cultural imperative, and everything is grounded in the culture of the individual and of that group of people. So if your culture dictates that, you know, you should be individualistic, then maybe collectivism doesn't make sense to those people.
Right.
But I think that's why, again, it's important for us to have these educational institutions where we can make sure that our children and have households where our children are firmly grounded in,
right,
in a culture that's consistent with our tradition and our experience on this earth for thousands of years, so that we will behave in ways that are consistent with what our culture dictates and our cultural mandates.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, a lot of times where, you know, we're living in captivity and we're, again, trying to assimilate. And, you know, and some of it is about survival. So that's understandable. But at some point, we have to say, we have to at least be able to say, all right, well, I'm doing some assimilationist activities right now because I'm trying to survive. I need to provide food, clothing, and shelter for my family and for my children and everything, because I don't want them to starve. They need to get what they need. But the end game is for us to not have to make these types of compromises.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of times that's not the end game. It's just, you know, we're in this survival mode. And if we say, okay, well, you know, I got to do to survive, so I'm going to do it. And then 10 years later, you're still doing it.
Right.
10 years later, you're still doing
it. Right. Cause you've entrapped yourself, and maybe you bought this and bought that. And so, you know, you succumb to the mundane everyday thing that I just got to continue to get over, you know, instead of realizing all the positive things you need to do. We're about to ready to wrap up, my brother. So go ahead and give me some final thoughts and so forth, because I got to get out of here. But I want to thank you for coming on, and also want to hopefully have you on, you know, again in the future, in the very near future. Okay.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate that, because we didn't even get a chance to talk about everything that I wanted to get into. But if I could just say, I mean, sometimes, in terms of creating independent educational opportunities for our children, it seems like a daunting task. Because, I mean, if you were a person that, you know, went to a high school that had 5,000 students in it, and it was a large campus and, you know, a huge building with five floors and all these, you know, a huge facility and, you know, a lot of different moving parts and a lot of people, you might feel like, well, wow, like how can I, or me and, you know, some of the people in my community build something like that. We can start small. I mean, it's like, you know, Malcolm X was talking about in the Ballad or the Bullet speech, you know, back in 1964, he said, you know, GM didn't start out what it is today. And he's talking about back in 64.
Right.
Woolworth, which was, you know, around in the past, is Woolworth is no more, but Woolworth was probably comparable to a Walmart. So I would say, I would, you know, modernize the phrase, the statement, and say, well, you know, Walmart didn't start out with what it is today. It started out as a mom and pop operation. Everything starts out small. So if we're talking about creating independent educational spaces, it can be something small. It can be something in your living room or your dining room,
right,
once a week or twice a week. And now with the technology, we can take advantage of
exactly
the technology and do something virtual. We can do some video conferencing.
Exactly.
We can use FaceTime on iPhones or whatever we got to do. And just teach something, just try to organize ourselves and then organize some youth and even adults. And I think, you know, maybe next time when I come on, I can talk about some type of initiatives to teach mathematics to parents.
Outstanding.
To parents, so that way we can empower the parents to be able to help their children with their homework.
Yeah.
I know a lot of parents probably experience a lot of frustration because if children come home with homework that they're not really equipped to help them with. I think that if we are in an ideal school environment, that when the school is a partner with the community, then the school will recognize that, and the school will say, okay, well, let's create something where we can educate parents. So that way, right. when the children are home, the parents can help the child with homework. So that, you know, the child doesn't have to fall by the wayside because their parent is unable. We can help the parent and not just sit back in negative judgment of the parent because they don't have the ability.
Right.
I think the school should provide that. But these are just some ideas that to some they would sound radical, but they're really, again, Amos Wilson, like, these are very common sense ideas.
Mm-hmm.
These are fundamental ideas. They just sound radical because of like Jacob Carruthers would say, because of the mess that we're in.
That's right.
We're in such a mess.
Yeah.
You know,
well, listen, my brother.
These ideas just seem so strange.
I'm really
so outlandish.
I'm really enjoying this conversation. I've got to sign off. Just hold on. But this has been fantastic, and I definitely want more because this is what this program is about. This is what it is about. This program deals with independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. And I understand it, and I clearly understand what you're talking about. So I'm going to end this program. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do it out, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for. So brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful weekend. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bivihodie means our victorious destiny, and we will be victorious. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed weekend. Be safe. See you on Monday. Peace.